We're in Jeremiah chapter 33 tonight. And if you remember last time, Jeremiah has been shut up in the prison in the palace of the king of Jerusalem. Let me make sure I get this right. Zedekiah. Yeah, I'm trying to remember his name. Zedekiah, the king Zedekiah, the king of Judah, had shut Jeremiah up in the prison, and he's basically a political prisoner, if you want to call him that. He's been arrested because he was preaching against the government, he was saying things that the king didn't like. He was preaching some hellfire and brimstone, and the king didn't like what he was saying. The prophecies that he was giving of what Jeremiah was saying that was going to be coming for the king and his household and for the city of Jerusalem, and so the priests and the prophets at the temple had been complaining, and the king was in agreement with them, and so they had him arrested, and so he's in the king's, it was called the prison at the king's palace, but he's still able to receive visitors. He's not in solitary. It does appear that possibly he's by himself in a holding place. I don't know if it's a cell or not, but he is able to have people come and visit him. And there's one man remember the man that wrote was writing for him. There was a book that Jeremiah had this man write, Baruch. And that man has spent some time with him. There are some others that come and visit him. Like he has a nephew or somebody that comes and visits him. But he keeps preaching, and tonight the topic tonight is the promise of restoration for Israel, and this is an area we've talked about off and on during this study, and we have to be careful. And I've mentioned this before, because Jerusalem was restored to, or not Jerusalem, but Israel was restored with Jerusalem, I guess you could say. Somewhat after the captivity, but not completely. Most of the restoration that we see talked about in the book of Jeremiah kind of coincides with what we read in Revelation 2. That's going to happen there. And it's because they're talking about the same time period. Jeremiah is predicting, and if you notice, he uses words like forever and from now on and those types of things, and those, you don't use those words for a time period that's not going to last very long, and we see we'll get to it eventually in the study, but when they come back from the captivity. After the 70 years of captivity in Babylon, they're quote unquote, I guess, good for a short period of time. But by the time you get to the day that Jesus comes on the earth, the Jews are a very wicked people, and especially the priests and the prophets, and they have made changes to the law. They've added to, taken away from the law of God to suit their own purposes. And Jesus even talks about that in the Gospels. So when we see these prophecies in the Old Testament, and in particular in our study tonight, he's not always talking about right after the captivity. Sometimes he's talking about much further in the future. And so we'll try to differentiate between the two when we can. Sometimes it's hard. Sometimes it's difficult to tell the difference in between the two. But we'll get to it, and we'll try when we can. So in verse 1, Jeremiah 33, verse 1. Moreover, the word of the Lord came unto Jeremiah the second time, while he was yet shut up in the court of the prison. Remember, last time was the first time the Lord came to him while he was in prison. Thus saith the Lord, the maker thereof, the Lord that formed it, to establish it. The Lord is his name. Why is the Lord telling Jeremiah this? Jeremiah already knows this. It's a reminder. You know, we've talked about the other day, we talked about reminders. The Lord gives us reminders of who he is. And usually, I guess every time he does it, it's because he thinks we need it. You know, so we may not think we do, but he does. He does it for a reason. He does it for a reason here. Jeremiah needs a reminder of who God is. Not just Jeremiah, but this is for all God's people from now on. When we read this, we know who God's talking to or talking about, and that who he is. Thus saith the Lord, the maker thereof, the Lord that formed it, that to establish it, the Lord is his name. Call unto me, and I will answer thee, and show thee great and mighty things which thou knowest not. He's not talking to everybody here. He's talking to Jeremiah. People will quote this verse, especially the Pentecostals, will quote this verse, and they'll say, well, God, this is what God said, you know, to his people. Well, no, he said this to Jeremiah, not to all of us. Yes, we ought to call on the Lord when we're in despair or whenever we want to just talk with him. And he'll answer us. Does he always show us great and mighty things? No. Sometimes it's just something quiet and simple. But in this case, he has a reason to show Jeremiah these things. He says, which thou knowest not. Things that you don't know. He doesn't always show us things that we don't already know. Just like verse 2. Jeremiah already knew that. So he's not going to call on God and God's going to show him that all over again. God's about to show him some things that hasn't shown him yet. Some new things, some new prophecy. For thus saith the Lord, the God of Israel, concerning the houses of this city, and concerning the houses of the kings of Judah, which are thrown down by the mouth and by the sword. And remember here, Jerusalem's under siege, but the cities, the other cities of Judah, have already been overthrown. Jerusalem was the last holdout, the last stronghold. Everything else has been overthrown, and all the kings of those cities are gone now. They've either been taken captive or they've been killed. They come to fight with the Chaldeans, but it is to fill them with the dead bodies of men whom I have slain in mine anger. And in my fury, and for all whose wickedness I have hid my face from this city. He brings up again the wickedness of the people. The wickedness of who? The people of God. Behold, I will bring it health and cure. I will cure them and will reveal unto them the abundance of peace and truth. There's going to come a time where God's going to heal Israel. We know through our studies, we've already talked about this, that's not happened yet. He's not healed Israel yet, but it's coming. And he says, and will reveal unto them the abundance of peace and truth. Israel has not seen peace and truth yet. They've seen periods of peace, but not everlasting peace. And they certainly haven't seen truth yet. We know that because you look at the land over there today and people say, well, this is talking about them. Well, no. They don't have the truth yet. That's pretty obvious. I mean, you don't see God's... saved people over there right now. Not an abundance of them anyway. He's talking about the whole nation, not just a small group, but there's going to be a time when the whole nation is going to be saved. And when I say whole nation, I don't mean what we think of as the nation. It's God's elect nation of Israel. Verse 7, and I will cause the captivity of Judah and the captivity of Israel to return, and will build them as at the first, He's going to rebuild Judah and Israel the way it was in the beginning. Now, if you've ever studied through the book of Nehemiah, you see where the prophet Nehemiah was put in charge of rebuilding the city of Jerusalem, rebuilding the walls. He talks about that quite a bit, and some of the other things in the city. That does happen. That is true. That happens at the end of the captivity. But he's talking further out into the future, not just after the captivity, because Israel and Judah and Jerusalem in particular are never fully rebuilt. You look at it today, and it's still a war-torn city. There's still ruins there. There's still things there that have never been replaced or rebuilt. For one, you know, we think of the temple itself. The temple's never been rebuilt. It will be one day, but it hasn't yet. And I will cleanse them from all their iniquity, whereby they have sinned against me. And I will pardon all their iniquities, whereby they have sinned, and whereby they have transgressed against me. What does it take for what happens when with what he's talking about here? There's going to be a group of people saved. That's what he's talking about. He says, I will cleanse them from all their iniquity. In other words, he's going to save them from their sins. That's not happened yet in Israel. We know that. We see that. Now, some will say, well, what about when Christ came and, you know, with John the Baptist's baptisms and the multitudes that were following Jesus around? And, well, remember, there's nothing that tells us that the whole multitude was saved. There were people in the multitudes that were. We see that. Remember in Acts, there was only 120 in the first church. Now, that doesn't mean that only 120 were saved, but there was only 120 in the church. So, there's some, and we don't know for sure, but you look at some of the stories in the Gospels, the woman at the well, there's some others that Jesus healed. It appears that they were saved at the time, but you never see where they were baptized, which means they would not have qualified for church membership. Doesn't mean that they weren't saved, because he does say that they were, but we never see that. We never see their baptism. Did it happen? Maybe it did. We don't know. But it doesn't show that in those stories. So we know that a widespread salvation with the people of Israel has not happened yet. And it shall be to me an aim of joy, a praise and an honor before all the nations of the earth, which shall hear all the good that I do unto them, and they shall fear and tremble for all the goodness and for all the prosperity that I procure unto it. All the nations of the earth have not praised and honored Israel. That's pretty obvious right now, because the vast majority of the, if not all, of the nations of the world right now hate Israel. That's pretty obvious. If you go back and study, in the beginning when the Jews were trying to take the land back, back in the late 40s, even our own country tried to hinder them from doing it. We've been to the one of the Holocaust museums, and there was things there that I'd never heard of. I mean, we just weren't taught it in school, and there was things maybe y'all were. You're older than we are, but I did not realize that the U.S. and the Allied forces after World War II tried to put a stop to it at one time in the beginning, and so. Even now, what we would consider the Allied forces, the Allied nations, are not praising and honoring Israel like God says they are here. This is going to come later. Verse 10, thus saith the Lord, again, there shall be heard in this place, which ye say shall be desolate without man and without beast, even the cities of Judah and the streets of Jerusalem that are desolate without man and without inhabitant and without beast. This takes place once Jerusalem is surrendered and Babylon comes in and destroys the city. It's not inhabitable for man or beast. The voice of joy and the voice of gladness, the voice of the bridegroom and the voice of the bride, the voice of them that shall praise the Lord of hosts. For the Lord is good, for his mercy endureth forever. And of them that shall bring the sacrifice of praise unto the house of the Lord, for I will cause to return the captivity of the land, as at the first, saith the Lord. Now, this bridegroom and bride that he talks about here, some are going to try to say that that's the Lord and the church, and I don't think it is. I think he's using that as an example of a celebration. There's going to be a celebration like there would be for a bride and a bridegroom at a wedding. And he's used this example before in Jeremiah. It's been several chapters back. We saw that. There's no comparison at all here to the Lord and the church. That's not what this is about. But it's about when they do return from the captivity, there's going to be a big party, a big celebration, because they're back in the land again. And you notice here, it says, "For I will cause the return, I will cause to return the captivity of the land, as at the first, saith the Lord." This is one of the places that we have to be careful, because it appears maybe he's talking about at the end of the 70 years of captivity, but he may not be. They don't fully return. Remember, even at the end of the captivity, not all of the Jews returned. They were still scattered all over the place. And that's evident in the New Testament when we look at the day of Pentecost in Acts 2. They were still scattered all over the place. This return of the captivity, he says, as at the first. What happened at the first? All of the Hebrew people left Egypt. They were only in Egypt at the time. They left Egypt and went to Israel. They went to the Promised Land. All of God's people. All of his elect. That's not happened again yet. It will. This captivity he's talking about, they're still, now we don't think of it as captivity, but they are still not home yet. And we know by what we've read in Revelation that there's going to come a time where God's going to call them from all over the earth. They're going to come back to Jerusalem. And God's going to send 144,000 of them, of his elect, into the wilderness for hiding. So there's going to come a time, and it'll be after that even, that they're going to repossess the land. Verse 12, thus saith the Lord of hosts, again, in this place which is desolate, without man and without beast, and in all the cities thereof shall be in a habitation of shepherds, causing their flocks to lie down. In the cities of the mountains, in the cities of the vale, and in the cities of the south, in the land of Benjamin, and in the places about Jerusalem, and in the cities of Judah, shall the flocks pass again under the hands of him that telleth him, saith the Lord. Behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that I will perform that good thing which I have promised unto the house of Israel and to the house of Judah. In those days and at that time will I cause the branch. Notice the word branch is capitalized. Is it capitalized in y'all's Bibles too? Who's that? It's talking about the Son of God. It's talking about the Lord. The branch of righteousness. So now we have no doubt who it is. There's only one branch of righteousness. To grow up unto David, and he shall execute judgment and righteousness in the land. Did he do that when he came the first time? No, he didn't. That's why I keep saying that this is not talking about the 70 years of captivity or the between the 70 years of captivity and the time he came. This does not fit that. When he comes back, to execute judgment and righteousness in the land. That's going to be at the end of the tribulation. Remember our studies in Revelation on that time period, that he comes back and executes judgment on the whole world, all those who are not saved. In those days shall Judah be saved. Judah will be saved. So, and Jerusalem shall dwell safely. And this is the name wherewith she shall be called, the Lord our righteousness. Jerusalem, Judah is not going to be completely saved until the end of the tribulation. And Jerusalem is not going to dwell safely until the millennium. So, this is still in the future, even for us. For thus saith the Lord, David shall never want a man to sit upon the throne of the house of Israel. Neither shall the priest, the Levites, want a man before me to offer burnt offerings and to kindle meat offerings and to do sacrifices or sacrifice continually. It's my understanding that after they come back from the captivity, there's never a king again, at least till Christ comes, that will sit on the throne of David, that is of the lineage of David. The ones that come after the captivity, they never have a king again that's out of the lineage of David. They try to say they are, but the Bible doesn't trace them back. And the Levites are not the same. You know, some of the priests in Jesus' day were not part of the Levites. I believe that's what he's talking about here. And in verse 19, and the word of the Lord came unto Jeremiah, saying, thus saith the Lord, if ye can break my covenant of the day and my covenant of the night, and that there should be not be day and night in their season, then may also my covenant be broken with David my servant, that he should not have a son to reign upon his throne, and with the Levites, the priests, my ministers. This covenant that he's talking about here, and this is a simple thing. It's not the covenant of the law. He's talking about, remember back in the day of creation, God said that there's going to be morning and evening. There's going to be day and night. That was a covenant. It's a type of covenant. It's a promise. So from Genesis 1 all the way through to eternity, till the end of this world, there's going to be day and night. Now, when we get into eternity, it's all going to be one day. But in this lifetime, it's going to be, God made a covenant with man that there's going to be day and night. That's a fact. And that's what he's talking about here. If God can break that covenant, then he would break the covenant about David and his son reigning on the throne. He's not going to do that, in other words, is what he's saying. God's not going to do that. If God could break the covenant of day and night, he would break that covenant with David. That's how tight a covenant this is. This covenant with David, remember, Jesus was of the lineage of David. And so, he is going to be what is referred to here as the son of David that will sit on the throne. Now, he's the son of God, but humanly speaking, he is of the lineage of David. He's going to reign upon the throne. And with the Levites, the priests, my ministers, the same thing with the Levites. There's going to come a time where the priests are going to be true Levites. As the host of heaven cannot be numbered, neither the sand of the sea measured, so will I multiply the seed of David my servant and the Levites that minister unto me. Moreover, the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah, saying, considerest thou not what this people have spoken, saying, the two families which the Lord hath chosen, he hath even cast them off? Thus they have despised my people, that they should be no more a nation before them. Thus saith the Lord, if my covenant be not with day and night, and if I have not appointed the ordinances of heaven and earth, then will I cast away the seed of Jacob. He's not cast away Israel. Now, he divorced her. We know that. But she's still part of the family. He hasn't disowned her. He divorced her. They're no longer married. And he says, "And David my servant, so that I will not take any of his seed to be rulers over the seed of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, for I will cause their captivity to return and have mercy on them." So, in the same way, the same covenant, or same type of covenant that God has promised man day and night, and he says he appointed the ordinances of heaven and earth, he has also made a covenant with David and with the seed of Jacob, he says here, and Abraham and Isaac. He has made a covenant with them and their seed that there would be a king. The King of Kings would come from the lineage of David and would rule on the throne of David. He's the only one who has the right to. Like I said, there was a period of time, and we're still in that period actually, there's not been a king in Israel that was from the lineage of David. But there's one coming. The Messiah's come. He's already prepared things and got things prepared for his second coming. But when he comes back, and remember this, people get this confused. This is a reminder. When he comes for his bride, he's not going to set foot on the earth. The rest of the earth, I don't believe the rest of the earth is going to see him when he comes that time. His people, he's going to call his people out. The archangel is going to sound the trumpet, and those who are dead are going to rise first, and those who remain alive are going to go after that. Will the rest of the earth know what's happened? I think some of them will. Some of them are not going to care. Some of them are going to think, well, we got them out of our way now. We can do what we want. That's kind of what I see happening in this nation for sure, if it's still a nation at that time. People are going to say, well, all the Christians are gone. We can party up now. We can do what we want. And that's what's going to happen. You can look at Revelation and see. It tells. When he comes back again at the end of the tribulation to take on the armies at the Battle of Armageddon, he is going to set foot on the earth. And we looked at that the other night. He's going to stand on Mount Zion, and the 144,000 are going to be there with him. And we'll get into more of that study later on that part. But remember, a lot of this prophecy in Jeremiah has not happened yet. It will. God promised it. And we see here, as he promised us day and night, and as he promised us the ordinances of heaven and earth, and then he has promised Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and David that their seed, one who is of their seed, would rule from David's throne. And he will. So we'll stop there for tonight.